radio SBS en français, en ligne et sur votre smartphone.
The great pleasure of welcoming on the French language program, Philippe Mora. Welcome to Melbourne.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And you've just flown in from Poland and you've lost your voice.
I lost it somewhere over the Pacific because I flew from Poland to Los Angeles.
And I bet your mum, Mieka, has got a remedy for it.
She has Calvados. Calvados was fantastic. It helped me a lot. Actually, do you have any Calvados on the show here? That would be helpful.
It's very early in the morning, but let's see what we can do towards the end of the show.
That's a French thing, let's face it.
You've got remarkable parents. They're a reference. Your mum is still a reference in the French community here in Australia, in Melbourne. And your dad, Georges Mora, had a fascinating role, I should say, perhaps, in the French resistance together with Marcel Marceau. And can you tell us about what they did? They saved hundreds and hundreds of lives of young Jewish children.
Many. They dressed. Marcel Marceau told me this himself personally. He does speak, by the way.
And he came on the French program once.
Well, you can't stop him speaking when he's off the stage. But he told me that my dad and he used to dress up as nuns and pretend that the children were Catholic orphans, and they would take them across the border, and they would hide. I don't want to give too much away, having seen.
No, we have to go and see the film.
Yeah, yeah. But they were real heroes, and in fact, when my mother and father got married, they got married at the headquarters of OSE in Paris, which was a French resistance organization. My father went very high up. And there was a man called George. Actually, his real name was George Garfinkel. Sounds like a Woody Allen movie. But George Garfinkel was the head of OSE. And Mirko, I don't know how much you know about my mother, but she, let's just say she's quite a character. And she told me that at the wedding, just when she was asked to say, "I do," George Garfinkel, who was best man, one of the heads of the resistance, pinched her bottom.
We have actually met your mother. She's come onto the French language program for a few times, and we've got the archives, and she's quite entertaining.
She's very entertaining, and Mirka is, in my opinion, of course I'm biased, but I think she's a wonderful artist, great artist. And part of her great art is her childlike vision. She's very naive. She sees things like a child, and she paints things like a child. But that's reflected in her personality as well. So she's uninhibited. I mean, as kids, we were embarrassed by our mother, you know, because when you're a kid, you want to conform. You don't want your mum arriving in bright colours and everything. And Mirka showed me a letter I wrote her once. She still got it. "Dear mum, if you pick me up from school, wear the grey dress, the grey sweater, the black shoes."
Tell us about your growing up in the 1950s in Melbourne.
Actually, we grew up in the city. Mm-hmm. We had a studio, 9 Collins Street, right in the middle of the city. Fitzroy Gardens was our backyard. And
Aspendale Beach was your favourite beach.
Aspendale was later on in summer. But, you know, Melbourne in those days was a backwater. In fact, the pond in Fitzroy Gardens was full of yabbies. And my brother and I used to catch yabbies for dinner in Fitzroy Gardens, which is pretty amazing when you think about it.
I came here in the 1970s, and we used to fish yabbies in Albert Park Lake.
There you go.
And they're no longer there.
No.
Monsieur Mayonnaise, tell us a bit more about the film. Let's retrace your dad's life. He was born in Leipzig, in Germany, and then they came to France to escape the Nazis.
Well, my father went to Leipzig, grew up in Leipzig, and he went to Berlin University in 1933, Humboldt University, great university. The physics professor was Albert Einstein. Mm-hmm. And in 1933, the first thing that Hitler did, the very first thing he did, was to kick all Jews and all teachers out of universities. And my father was in that first round of Jewish people being kicked out. His father said, "Look, this is really bad. Go to Paris or get out of here." So he went to Paris, got French citizenship. By 1939, when the war started, He got his parents out, and he got them to America. Then after escaping the Nazis in Germany, they bloody well invade Paris, and so he went underground.
Go somewhere else.
He went underground,
mm-hmm.
and he
and changed his name.
Automatically joined the resistance. In fact, I asked my son, "Sir, how did you know if someone was in the resistance?" And his answer was interesting. He said, "You just knew, because there was no way you could have any."
The body language.
You couldn't wear a T-shirt saying I'm in the resistance. And body language, the vibe and everything. So that was fascinating.
And the common cause.
The common cause. And so then Marceau knew Mirka and my father separately before they met each other. Mirka worked for Jose too at the end of the war. And she met my dad and they thought there was going to be another hot war in Europe. So my mum had a soft spot for a romantic idea about Australia. And she said, let's go to Australia, kangaroos. And my dad came here, and his first job, which for some reason I think is funny, but I don't know why it's not really funny, but his first job was as foreman of the only matzah factory in Melbourne. And one of my early memories is these giant matzahs coming out of ovens. So food has always been in our family.
Part of the family. So after the war, I think your dad never spoke about the war. How did you get him to speak about it?
Well, you know, like a lot of people who survived, particularly I've found people who did heroic things don't like talking about it. And it's because so many of their good friends died. And they don't feel like the French government wanted to honor my father at some point for his resistance activities, but he refused. But he later took an award, a cultural award. But they don't feel, they strongly don't want to take any credit for survival. In other words, look, I could have been killed too. I'm not going to get an award for surviving. So many people I loved are gone. So he never spoke about it. But, you know, you want to know what your parents don't want to tell you. Whatever they don't want to tell you, you want to know. So I went on this quest really early on, like, what? Why the hell are we in Australia? Why are my parents speaking with funny accents? Why have they got a French restaurant called Balzac? And so, you know, it just went on and on and on. And, of course, my father told me more and more as it progressed. And it's kind of ironic that it took a mime, Marcel Marceau, to tell me the whole story.
What is the importance of Jewish humor in your family history, to keep you going, to perhaps forget the Holocaust? And
well, look, I think humor is essential to survival, not just for Jewish people, but for everybody.
But some were traumatized by the war.
Some people are traumatized and they don't recover.
Mm-hmm.
But then a lot of people were not traumatized. And, you know, for example, Mel Brooks. This is an example of how you can make comedy out of tragedy. Mel Brooks went to Germany, and the German interviewer said, "Well, Mr. Brooks, why do you think it is that Germans don't have a sense of humor?" And Mel Brooks said, "Well, didn't it occur to you that you killed all the funny people?" And so, you know, last night at the premiere, I told a story about Jewish humor about Walter Matthau. I had dinner. My wife and I had dinner with Walter Matthau and his wife, and he's Jewish. The subject of the Holocaust came up, and he said, "Oh, me and Doris wanted to visit Auschwitz, so we went to Auschwitz, and on the way to Auschwitz, we had the most horrible fight we've ever had in our marriage. And by the time we got there, Doris said, 'I don't want to talk to you, Walter. We have to do separate tours of Auschwitz, and we'll meet after.' So they did the separate 3-hour tour, and then they met up again at the end, and Doris and Walter Matthau says, Doris said to me, 'Walter, you really ruined Auschwitz for me.'"
Philippe, tell us a bit more about the film, about Monsieur Mayonnaise and the creative team that surrounds you, and perhaps a word about the music composer as well, who was interviewed by the Polish program, by the way, last week.
Look, I just obeyed orders. directors are very good actors. Let me rephrase that. I'm not acting in this movie, but I understand the problems of directing a film very well. I've made 45 movies, So for me, actually, it was kind of easy. I sort of had just sat back and, you know, Philippe, can you move a little bit to the right? No problem. Philippe, can you sit down on there and then stand up? No problem. So I respected Trevor, as I told you, very much as a director. So he would set up situations. He was he didn't tell me what was going to happen because he wanted my genuine reaction. And my genuine reaction on several occasions was absolutely like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? And that's with documents regarding my mum and people that my father saved. So, you know, just if I can be a little bit philosophical for a moment, there's really no such thing as a documentary. There's what we know is a documentary, but it's never objective. It's always the point of view of someone, usually the director or the writer. There's no such thing as objective. And sometimes a fictional film can be more objective than a documentary. So I was very kind of aware of that as we were making this, that this is a point of view. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with a point of view. But one shouldn't think documentaries are the whole story. They never are. They can't be. There's a very famous documentary called Nanook of the North, 1922, one of the first feature film documentaries by Robert Flaherty, very famous, a classic. And he went to make a documentary about the Eskimos, North Alaska, I think. And he couldn't fit his crew into the igloo. So he said, well, we've got to build a giant igloo. So they built a giant igloo, and they filmed the whole film in this giant igloo. Well, right there, that's the birth of documentaries.
So, Philippe Morat, what is your next project?
I'm working on a Life of Salvador Dali. I'm doing two biopics, terrible, dreaded word, biopics in the film business. But I love biographies. I'm doing one on Salvador Dali and also General Sir John Monash, which is an amazing story, Monash, which we were never taught the real story.
The battles on the Western Front?
Well, 8th of August 1918, he crashed through the German lines, and the Germans credit him with not just winning that battle, but winning World War One. We're told he's a great general. We're not taught at school he won World War One, but Germans are, and he was Jewish, by the way. The only Jewish general in the British Empire. And guess what? He's written out of all the British histories of World War One. That's another thing which is bizarre.
Was it a conspiracy, according to you?
I think it's anti-Semitism and anti-Australianism. He was a colonial, in inverted commas, and he's Jewish. Two huge strikes against him in the mind of the British elite. However, the king really liked him and put him in charge of the Australian army. He's the first Jewish general in charge of a national army since biblical days. That's an amazing fact.
Soon we will be celebrating the victory at Villers-Bretonneux in 1918.
Right. And Amiens.
And Amiens.
Yeah. There's the French Prime Minister at the time of World War One. He came to the front to see Monash, and he made a big speech, and he said, "I'm the Prime Minister of France, and I want to tell everyone that." He said words to the effect, "I want to tell everyone that I've come to see the Australians, and having seen the Australians, I know we're going to win." It was an incredible speech, and that's because of Monash. So it's a wonderful story, and you know, we Australians we're always embarrassed to tout our successes. I think it's the British influence Well, you know, there's been a lot written about this, I think we should be much prouder than we are.
Philippe Morat, great pleasure to meet you, and we look forward to the next project, especially the one on Sir John Monash.
Thank you very much, and I look forward to being here again with you when I've got my voice back.
SBS en français. Partagez nos rubriques sur Facebook.